Blog Talk Radio. Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you to Backyard Labrish. And I see that we have callers on the board, and I want to remind you that this is a Labrish, and we would love for you to interact with us and put in your two cents, or in the old days in Jamaica, we would say your kwati. And people in the diaspora in my age group will perhaps know what I'm talking about from the days of Kwati and Jill. And actually, I'm trying to remember the measures were pints and quarts and something else. But we had farthings and penny halfpennies and whatever with the English coinage. So we're going to really dig back in the old days of marketing, even way before our time tonight, because we're celebrating Jamaica's history and its internal marketing system that, as I was growing up, I thought it was cool, but now that I'm doing the research, I can connect the dots and see that it was so important and the reason for a lot of the way the culture is. So I want to welcome the callers on the board and those listening online, and you're here in the backyard. I hope you have your easy chair. And I understand it's hot on the island now, but I know it's almost time for the trade winds to blow over. So grab your cup of rum punch or whatever you would sip in the backyard and just relax, because we're going to be going back and entertaining you, hopefully. So I want to remind our callers, first of all, for those listening online, if you want to interact with me here in the backyard, you would dial 718-766-4558. Then I will see that you want to talk if you hit 1 on your telephone. So I can see the callers who are calling in on my switchboard, but I won't open the mic unless you hit 1. So whenever you want to join the Labrish, please just hit 1 on your telephone, because that tells me that you want to put in your kwati. So tonight, again, we are discussing Jamaica's internal market. And I just love this Jamaica Heritage Encyclopedia that has been just a great resource for me by Oliver Sr. And most of what I research is from this and some other articles online. There are several books, actually, on Jamaica's internal marketing system, mostly done by scholars, you know, as it relates to trade and industry and slavery itself. Anyway, reading from her book, she describes markets as a lot of information that I will read to some of the people, they can really connect why we experienced what we did when we grew up in Jamaica in the early days. Jamaica's internal market system is very well developed, markets having sprung up in the earlier settlements. There were three markets in Port Royal at the time of the earthquake, one for vegetable, one for fish, and one for meat. Now, one of the first acts of the council meeting in the new city, Kingston, that's once Port Royal got wrecked in 1692, was an order for the erection of a market to be held daily and the appointment of a market clerk. Now, by the 18th century, an island-wide marketing system was well established, with rural slaves supplying provision and urban hucksters supplying goods for sale. Sunday used to be the market day, as it was the slave's day off. Now, the pattern of marketing goes back to the great markets of West Africa, the area from which most of the enslaved Africans came. Now, from the beginnings of the markets, trading was dominated by women, a feature of West African markets which continues to characterize Jamaica's market to this day. Now, slaves in Jamaica had to cultivate their own plots of land in order to feed themselves. The surplus they sold or bartered. Thus, outside the cities, the earliest Jamaican markets grew up on the larger sugar plantation. Other markets developed as on the roads. And we have that even to this day. As the markets grew, they attracted people enslaved and free from far and wide. They sold foods such as ground provisions, fruits, vegetables, poultry, as well as semi-manufactured goods such as tobacco, rolled in lengths, called, and I wonder if the older folks didn't remember this, it was called jackass rope. Oh boy, I remember that word. Homemade chocolate, cocoa honey, and head sugar, which was wet sugar. And boy, do I remember that. Now, both slaves and free people also handcrafted for sale products such as clay pots, which we know as yabbas, and straw baskets. Some of the hustlers were urban slaves selling goods on behalf of their masters and mistresses. These included provisions, handcrafts, and baked goods. In addition to fixed markets, vendors roamed the towns or traveled overland by canoes and coastal vessels to other towns or plantations. In the city before the erection of the large market, trading was often done barter form, and it took place at the grass yards. I remember when I was growing up, there was a grass yard in Kingston. And I'm sure perhaps, I don't know if there were any in the country, but I don't know if there are any Kingstonians on the line tonight that can relate to that. It really sent chills down my spine because when I read all of this, because I remember some of those names. And again, ladies and gentlemen, my loyal audience, remember now, I'm a senior, so I go way back. I can perhaps remember, and I still have a lot of my memory. It's not all intact. But as I do my research, then it just seems to snap back in place. Because I remember there was some place in Kingston that was a marketplace, and the name of it was the Grass Yard. Anyway, these were usually vacant lots where the products of cabinet makers, yabba makers, and dressmakers were on display alongside the wares of country folk. Now, Coronation Market replaced the main grass yard in Kingston. Ooh, so I think I went back really far. I just heard about it. Now, the lot where the chief product was charcoal for cooking was known as a coal yard. So they had all sorts of markets in the days of, slavery and emancipation. During that period, it goes back that far. But what I thought was very interesting is that the slaves were allowed to cultivate their own food, and then they could sell the surplus in the marketplace. So they were trading from way back then, you know, unlike what was happening to some of the slaves in other places. And I'll touch on that because there's some information on that here too. Now, some Jamaican markets still bear the names of the estate on which they were first organized. These include Papin and Constant Spring in St. Andrew Parish, Golden Grove in St. Thomas, and Darlaston in Westmoreland Parish. Now, after emancipation, many of the former slaves took to the hills to cultivate their own plots of land. And as the pattern of settlement changed, many new markets came into being. The best of these is known as New Market in St. Elizabeth Parish. And, of course, I think everybody from Kingston can remember one special market. Now, for me, as a child, I might have gone to the market just perhaps once or twice, but I remember going to Christmas Market. It was also called the Grand Market in the older days, but in my days, I remember it was called Christmas Market. And it was held downtown, but I understand from this book that that went out in the late 50s. Now, I left Jamaica in 1959, so I suppose that was the last year that they had it. But apparently they don't have it anymore because for the people who go to Jamaica or know a lot about what's going on there now, I don't think that, you know, the people who are the big traders, you know, the middle class and the wealthy, would go downtown to trade, to buy anything, because the whole city is developed now, so they have shopping centers all over. So I suppose at Christmas time, they wouldn't be going down there. But I thought that was quite interesting. And it mentions here a little bit about the Grand Market or Christmas Market. It used to be a special market held at Christmas time on Christmas Day or the market day immediately preceding Christmas. Grand Market was regarded as the principal social event of the towns. Oh, apparently they had them all over. A time for dressing up and promenades. The tradition continued in Kingston until the early 1950s, and special Christmas articles, toys, balloons, noisemakers, and soil drink were sold on these occasions. And again, I want to ask our listeners, I see we have a listener from 716-210 and 646-479, so please just touch one on your telephone when you want to join the Labrish. So I'm going to flip over now to what a lot of our listeners might, some might not, cannot relate to it, but, you know, the things that the country people bring into town are called ground provisions. And under ground provisions in this encyclopedia, it says it is still the province of a small farmer today. You know, it's what they call their area that they plant, I suppose. It's organized as the small plot of land assigned by the estate owner in the old days to each slave who was expected to grow his or her own food. When the sugar plantations were first established, special areas were cultivated to feed the slaves. But the responsibility was more and more transferred by the master to the slaves themselves. And the provision ground system was well developed by the end of the 17th century. However, not all slaves were taken care of by the system, and some starved or lived by stealing. The slave plots were also subject to natural and other disasters like the rest of the plantation. In the years 1780 to 1788, some 1,600 slaves died from a combination of many disasters besetting the island and really causing an extreme food scarcity. It created because of it was either a drought or a hurricane, or something. Now, as well as the American War of Independence, which affected imports. They couldn't get things into the island. At first, slaves had Sunday afternoons and Sundays and Christmas and Easter holidays to work in their grounds. But as the prosperity from sugar increased, so did the demand for the industry, and the slaves' only time for personal cultivation was limited to Sunday. Now, later, alternate Sundays out of crop were added. So I thought it was quite interesting that, you know, even though the slaves were so far away from their native land, they still could enjoy their food, unlike what was happening here in the United States. And this encyclopedia, it have some information on that too. Now, some went to work in the fields during the lunch break from plantation labor, others at night. During crop time, when all hands were required to quickly reap and grind the cane, and labor continued around the clock, there was little time for the grounds. Now, despite these difficulties, by the mid-18th century, many of the slaves were not only providing for themselves, but were selling their surplus at the Sunday markets. Now, it is estimated that the slave, listen to this, controlled 20% of the cash circulating in the island. I was blown away with that. They, in other words, I suppose they were allowed to keep it if it's mentioned here that they controlled it. Now, some slaves also kept small stock, although there were laws prohibiting this practice. By the 19th century, they were described as owning cows and provided much of the island's poultry and livestock. Now, fowls roosted in trees above the huts, and chickens were hung in baskets to protect them from rats. Pigs were allowed to roam at night and feed on the master's property to be recalled home with a special whistle. Sometimes cows were owned collectively by several slaves. They were allowed pasturage on the master's property in the expectation that they would be sold to him at below market price. That just tickled the hell out of me because talk about smart. Not only did they own the cows, they got permission for them to feed on their master's property and then turn around and sold them to the same masters at a lower price. I mean, talk about negotiation. Boy, oh boy. Now a lot of our listeners, I think, can relate to this haggling and, you know, when the market people will say one price and then the consumer suggests another price and it goes back and forth. I mean, it goes way back. So, the grounds were originally called something else, you know, a Spanish word. And then, of course, it went back to calling it the ground. Now, it was originally cleared by fire. You know, they would clear the plot that they're going to cultivate. Now, couples living together usually united their grounds. So apparently, each individual was given a certain amount. And if they were, two slaves were living together, then they combined their plots. Even small children helped. Now, crops such as yam, cocoa, and pumpkins, plantain, and ackee were staples of the provision ground. That's what it was originally called, similar to the plot of a small farmer today. As in the case today, there was a separate kitchen garden around the dwelling where okra, callaloo, and vegetables were cultivated. So a lot of things that go on in Jamaica, even today, and I know when I was growing up, goes way back, just the customs and how things were done. Now, it is believed that the skills in agriculture and marketing that the Jamaican slaves developed through the provision ground system and the money they earned were invaluable in contributing to the development of the rural life in the post-emancipation years. Now, comparing their situation to that of the North American slaves, one writer notes that the related Sunday markets transformed the slaves into part-time peasants and petty traders. When emancipated, they had already acquired the habits, experience, and talents of an independent peasantry and petty bourgeois. The slaves of the Old South did not have an equivalent. The other side of the slaveholders boast that their slaves were well-fed and theirs were not. You know, even then they were, teasing each other. And they mention here that the slaves of the South were not anywhere near to the extent of the Jamaican slaves because they had learned to take care of themselves in a world of production and market. And I don't know about you listeners, but I thought that was very interesting because I remember sometimes some years ago, my kids who were born here telling me about this television show that they were watching. And I think, I don't know if it was about Jamaicans or if it had Jamaicans in it, but they were talking about how the Jamaicans had six jobs. One particular character on this television series, but implying how it was unusual, I suppose, on the American standards, for black people to be so entrepreneurial that they were always working or wanted to be always occupied. But it goes way back because that's a big difference in the way they were schooled, you know, and their mindset of the plantation owners on the island. And I suppose a lot of the other islands around. But since this is an encyclopedia about Jamaican heritage, it only refers to them. I'm not familiar with much of what went on the other islands since, I have so much information that I want to research, and at my age, I don't have a lot of time. So if any of our listeners are from another island and wanted to get into this talk or have some information on what might be relevant in the marketing system, please just hit one on your telephone. My loyal listener from the Bronx don't seem to be on tonight. I see a 631-816 number. Home of the Yankees, if that's you, hit one on your telephone. Anyway, my co-host had an engagement this evening and is not with us today. But in this encyclopedia, the writer refers to, you know, you can cross-reference. And one of the cross-references gangs or jobbing. Not the gangs, not like it relates to gangs today, but the old-time meaning. Now, there were not all slave owners were landowners. Some made a living from hiring out their slaves to the estates or other enterprises to perform specific tasks. Now, these so-called jobbers were often skilled workers who might also be hired for individual tasks. They could live away from their owners for the duration of the task, but were expected to remit to him or her a fixed portion of their pay. In other words, they didn't have to give everything up. They got something out of it. Often owners of jobbing gangs were town dwellers, and many were free coloreds. Now, I also read in this that when the slaves, the bulk of the slaves arrived in Jamaica, there were already free black people there. I haven't reached the point where it says where they came from. I think they were left over from the Spanish, I suppose. But it was interesting how, you know, there were colored people, as they call them then, who owned slaves and were then jobbing them out to the plantation owners. But that brings me to the period that we all know for the Higglers. And it said here the word higgler, that is so much part of the Jamaican economic and cultural landscape, is an English word meaning dealer. So the name originally referred to the Jamaican countrywoman, or less frequently man, who brought agricultural produce to the markets to sell. In recent times, It has acquired a much wider meaning to embrace vendors in many other products not traded by the original higgler, and is internationally in scope as higglers now travel abroad to bring back imported goods to sell. In addition to the original market vendors who date from the earliest settlement of the island, street and sidewalk vendors of articles such as homemade confectionery, sea sweets, also have a long history. Note was taken in 1940 of the latest higglers, those selling in haberdashery. They sat on city sidewalks or walked up and down with their wares, earning them the name walking bargain stores. I don't know if anybody was familiar with that, but I never heard that phrase before. But this encyclopedia claimed that in the, must be the late 40s, they were referred to as walking bargain stores. Now, they were the forerunners of those vendors from the 1970s onwards, whose addresses were known as Bend Down Plaza. From the fact that the purchaser had to bend down to view the ware, usually imported goods, that were spread out on a sidewalk. As the civic authorities sought to regulate sidewalk vending, they gave these higglers the title of, are you ready for this, informal commercial importers, or ICIs. I never knew that. They now have an acronym to describe them. They're ICIs, some of whom have turned their original street trading into well-established business. Still, higglers remain the most commonly used term. Now, I see a hand from 718-879. So let me open up the mic. Good evening and welcome to the backyard.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, it's you.
Yeah, from the Bronx.
Your claim to fame, please, so our listeners can know.
Yeah, this is Lay from the Bronx, the home of the Yankees, and also the home of the prospective Solo Mayor.
Oh, yes, Miss Politics.
The Supreme Court judge.
She has been...
No, not yet, but soon.
Oh. In the making.
In the making.
Okay. Well, you know, what is her... You know, we're talking about our higglers now tonight. Did you know they're called the ICIs?
I never heard of it.
By this time,
I had already left the island, and I noticed that several people... probably that fit that description you just gave.
Right.
Would come to the United States and purchase stuff down at the Lanza Street and other cheap areas,
yeah,
and bring it back to the island.
Well, they don't call it cheap.
ICIs
now. You don't talk about cheap. Cheap.
Well, by the time it gets back to wherever the pedal is. Stuff is not cheap anymore.
Bend Down Plaza.
Bend Down Plaza or whatever.
Right. Now, the profession of buying and selling in whatever form is mainly in the hands of women, and over many centuries have assisted them in forging their independence, both economically and socially.
So let me ask you, since the government seemed to have gotten involved in naming them, did they require them to have a license or anything like that?
It doesn't say here, but I think so. I think that in some places, I don't know if all over the country, but you know, that the whole idea, thing I'm realizing here, Leigh, is that it's something that was in the psyche from way back in 17-something.
Yeah, I heard your historical commentary on that.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure. The only thing I know about, and of course, men weren't allowed to go to markets in my time.
You mean boys or men?
I'm not talking about boys. I'm talking about men. That was strictly a thing for the women folk to do.
Right.
But anyway, the only thing I know about markets is that there was several markets in Kingston. I mean,
yes.
You know,
if I remember well, I read on in some other historical data, there was a market called Chiggerfoot Market.
Oh yes.
And I remember the word grass yard. They had a grass yard someplace in Kingston. I suppose, I don't know if they were talking about the grass yard or I have foggy memories, but as I go through this, you know, things, I just sort of have different flashbacks.
Well, there is also, I know, Jubilee Market and Carnation Market.
But the one I don't seem
to recall is Redemption Ground.
Yes, I remember that. I don't remember where it was, but the word is familiar. They don't have it in this encyclopedia.
Yeah, I saw that in something on the internet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, and now they said the markets provided the opportunity for a woman to achieve by her own abilities and build her reputation as a businesswoman.
There we go.
It is a place where her status is based on this role. In the market, the higgler is queen of her domain. Huh.
But what I can tell you, though, is that the markets that we had in Jamaica compares very well to markets that I've seen in all over the Caribbean and Latin America and South America. I've been to the market in Venezuela and Colombia, and they're similar. In Puerto Rico, it's much like Jamaica. And Costa Rica has a nice market. It tends to be a little bit touristy. But, you know, where they have mostly souvenir-type things rather than produce. But like in Dominican Republic, it's almost identical to the markets that we have in
Jamaica. Talking in terms of food provision and all of that?
Well, selectively they would have an area set aside for vegetables, another for, as you would say, and even meats.
Right.
You know? Right, so...
Well, I remember that as a child. I remember the times when I was young, my mother took me to the market. There was a meat section, and, you know, I don't know what... Sometimes I remember there was one chopping board, and whether you were buying pork, beef, or chicken, it all chopped on the same board. And they didn't wash the board. They used the same chopper. And nobody got salmonella.
But the thing is, this is absolutely fresh meat, you know.
Whatever
went to the market would be literally slaughtered the night before.
Right, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the perhaps would be up all night, you know, taking care of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was.
Oh, I mean, who knows who died from any of this stuff?
No. Nobody died. You know why? And I'm going to do that on another show. it's all the herbs and seasonings that we, you know, nobody did medium steaks in those days. We didn't bother with steaks. You know, meat was cooked in different ways.
But it's funny you should say that, because I was going to ask you to do a series on home remedies.
Yes. Oh, yes. That is in the making.
And pushed tea and all of that.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many of them that we might have to select a particular, like do it in two segments. And I want to welcome our listeners online and also the ones that are calling in, and to remind everybody that you're listening to Margaret Marshall on Blog Talk Radio, and this is Backyard Labrish. So for a labrish, we need you to interact with us and leave your mark. You know, whatever we do on the radio is archived in cyberspace. And even shows we did last year, someone could access the show online and hear it live, as if it, you know, we're just talking. So let your voice be heard and put in your quappy. Now, I remember in the old days, when we had the English money,
yeah,
we had Quatty and Jill.
Yeah,
and I were the measures different? I can't remember. Than they are now.
No.
I remember we had Big Jill. Big Jill was a measure.
Yeah, well, you know, the measures are the same, only they don't use those
small ones
anymore.
Yeah, and they were made, there were cute little measures that were made like out of zinc or something.
Yeah.
Aluminum. We didn't have aluminum then, but I suppose it was zinc. And they would measure the peas and all of that in it.
Yeah.
When you buy.
Right.
And it was of course, we didn't have supermarkets in those days. But you could get everything in there except flour. I remember you could get wet sugar. Because
yeah.
When I used to go to Savlamar for summer vacations, lemonade was made with wet sugar.
That's the best lemonade.
Yes, and you pick the limes off the trees.
Yeah.
Now, I don't remember seeing lemon out there when I was growing up. It was always lime.
We weren't into lemon.
Right, it was always lime. But the best, and they used to call it, I know the country people used to call that wash, like wash down. It's the wet sugar. If it's not made from wet sugar, it's not a wash. And it's actually like it's fermented. It would froth. You know, it would have a head.
Well, I probably told the story already. When we used to go to school camp in Montego Bay, on the way from where the campgrounds was, to Doctor's Cave, we would go on a daily basis to Doctor's Cave to swim.
Uh-huh.
And on the way was this woman that had ginger beer and lemonade made from this wet sugar you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And until this day.
They're still doing it with wet sugar?
What?
They're still doing it with the wet sugar?
No, this is not. This is not. No, I'm saying. Until this day, I'm remembering.
Oh, I got you. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just couldn't wait to get to the stall. You know.
I love that thing.
And that was so refreshing. Who knew about any of these fancy sodas or anything?
Right, right.
This was the thing, and when the St. George's boys get together of that era, we all talk about this.
Oh, man. Now, did you hear the word wash down before? Or the term?
In different contexts, you know, people would eat, what is that thing that's made from molasses? The brown cake that...
cupcake?
No, it's.
Oh, you mean the Christmas pudding? No.
No, it's not a fun. It's not a. I can't remember the name. But
anyway,
they eat this thing with pear.
Uh huh. Bulla.
It's round and brown.
Bulla.
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 Yes. Bulla
and pear and the wash me down.
Right. Well, I see 718210 has a hand up. So, hello, welcome to the backyard. Who am I speaking with? Mic is open.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, this is Janine. Hi, Margaret. How are
Hi,
you?
Hi, Janine. Welcome to the backyard.
Yeah, I'm calling from Buffalo today.
Wow.
Yeah. So my area code is a little different. It's 716.
Right, I noticed that. So
yeah.
I'm telling you, this technology is wonderful. I mean, we talk about the good old days back when, but, you know, I'm still having a ball with the new technology. And I just...
Janine, did you ever hear about wash, what you call it? Washdown?
Washdown, uh-huh.
No, not familiar with that one.
That the Sablamar thing.
Yeah. But I'm familiar with the market because I used to go with my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And I used to love going. She used to go like Friday nights. And just the confusion and the excitement really gave me a thrill, you know. Because one minute the trucks are out there and they're unloading the stuff. And then you're walking in the market and there is this push cart trying to come through and saying, hot water, hot water. You have to run out the way. Or they would run you down.
Yeah, imagine what that push cart is. Those box carts that the guys used to push in.
They use with their foot. They would like push off with their foot and
steer
it and run.
And the wheels were like you know, like that steel wheels with the little marble, steel marbles in it. What you call them?
They would make it out of wood, and the top part would actually have like the steering, like the car.
They have a wheel in it.
What?
Oh, wheels, yes.
Uh-huh.
And they would use their foot to push it off and then very fast, and then they would jump on and steer it to the wheel. But when they're
every
coming...
Every street had that much. Yeah,
yes. And when they're coming through in the market because they want to go through so fast, they would say, hot water, hot water. Because, of course, you hear hot water, you're going to jump out the way.
Yes.
Yeah. And I used to love going with her because she had, like, her special people.
Right. And
yeah.
It speaks here about people staying at a special place all the time so people could locate them.
Right.
You knew exactly where they were.
Exactly.
I got a question for both of you. Like, when some of the items that you buy, they would say... for instance, if you wanted some gunga peas.
Where are you going with this?
No, I just wanted to ask a question. I mean, you asked for gunga peas and the woman...
It married.
Exactly.
It married something
married,
else.
It married
yes.
The pumpkin.
Right. The point is that, and that's just what I'm talking about before, you know, people in Jamaica, peasants,
uh-huh.
You know, as they're referred to,
industrial.
They are schooled in negotiation.
Yeah.
And not only that, they were taught to be smart. In other words, if pumpkin isn't selling and gunga peas is, in order to get gunga peas,
you have to buy the
one is short. You understand? It's because one is short, one isn't selling. Or they don't have a lot of that one to supply all their customers. So if you want that, you have to buy something else.
In marketing, you would call it a lost leader.
Right. But there wasn't any loss there, I think.
Also, they used to sell the coconut oil. Remember that?
Yes.
You would take
yes.
your bottle, and they would have this big container, and then they would put a funnel into
uh-huh.
your bottle, and they would, you know...
And that was the pure homemade
coconut oil. Yes, that's what we used to cook with at the time.
Right, the coconut was picked from their property,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it was harvested
oil.
And also produced, you know,
exactly.
right there
Mm-hmm. Where they live.
I guess in those days we never heard about cholesterol.
You know, that's right.
No, but they say it's a very good oil to use, you know, that coconut
Right.
oil.
Right.
Well, sometimes they say yes and sometimes they say no.
Yeah, we usually buy the eggs from them too. My grandmother used to take this container. It's like this pan that has a cover.
Shot pan.
Yeah, exactly. And they would put the eggs in that to prevent it from breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would have a separate basket just for the fruits.
Right.
And a separate basket for the other stuff, you know.
Right.
My main thing was going because there was a lot of eating going on. You know,
mm-hmm.
you go along and you're eating
banana. You sample the stuff.
Yes. And they get to know you, so, you know.
Right.
And they were really nice, friendly people. Everybody
was
darling and, you know.
Yes.
To me,
and they were very complimentary of people. Steering, "Hi, sweetheart, how are you doing? What the way you're pretty."
Yes.
Is this where you buy from them and not the other person?
Right.
Girl, you're back with your grandmother, you know, things like that.
Right.
And of course, a lot of them used to come with their either husband or their boyfriend jacket.
Mm-hmm.
I guess to show you that they belong to somebody. I don't know. But
it was so. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah,
but you know, they traveled open trucks from the counterparts.
Yes.
You know, with the seats across.
Yes.
In those days, they didn't have the minivans like they have now.
No.
They were
open with the tarpaulin. With the tarpaulin, they call it at the
right,
top.
Right, tarpaulin, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But normally, unless it's raining, you know, they're out in the open, you know, with the breeze going to them.
They are. They were, rather. They were, yes.
Now, there's a difference between the Kingston Higgler and the Country Higgler here.
Mm-hmm.
They say traditionally the Country Higgler brings produce to the market for sale either directly to the consumer or to other Higglers called Town Higglers. Now, town dwellers who rent space in the market and sell to the housewives. The Country Higgler's stock come from her own family's cultivation on their plot of land.
Mm-hmm.
Or she walks around and buys from other farmers in her area.
And
now, customarily,
I think I'm remembering, as you're talking, that the sellers would have a... I think they rent a spot in these markets.
Yes,
definitely
had to give a spot.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they would bring their stuff to that particular spot. You'd see them there all the time.
Right. It's like you know exactly where to find who, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they're talking now about way back in the days before they used to travel on trucks now. In early times, these women, and they were mostly women that took the things to market, traveled mainly on foot. With the goods carried on their heads.
The head, uh-huh.
And on donkeys and mules over long distances down mountain tracks and country trails till they reach the highway leading to the city and towns.
I know about the donkey.
These procession of Higglers proceeding into the city have been much photographed and printed.
Later on,
mules and mule-drawn drays, donkey carts, and still later trucks laden with Higglers and their goods became a more common sight on the highways. The old-style market woman with her proud bearing as she carried enormous loads on her head was for centuries a familiar image denoting Jamaica. Her working dress consisted of a wraparound bib, an apron,
mm-hmm.
with two large deep pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And a bandana
mm-hmm.
head tie over which she sometimes wore a large straw hat for traveling.
And sometimes a cutter to keep on the basket.
Yes. This is what gave the balance, I suppose, you know, as they walked with it.
Right.
So, man, it is so interesting to me to just connect the dots, you know?
Right.
Now, this is how they describe ground provision. The provision ground, which is st- still the province of the small farmer today originated as a small plot of land assigned by the estate owner to each slave, who was expected to grow his or her own food. Now, when the sugar plantations were first established, special areas were cultivated to feed the slaves, but the responsibility was more and more transferred. Oh, I read this already. I think.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, I sure did. So I will enlighten you now with something that I read here, and I even noticed it. You know, I'm sure that most of you perhaps realize that slavery itself was abolished a long time in most of the Caribbean before it was abolished here.
Right.
But even in other parts of the world, it was 27 years later that the United States, you know, freed their slaves. And for Brazil, Lay, you perhaps can relate to this, it was 23. But for Cuba, it was 35. They didn't have slavery abolished there till 1890. Did you know that?
I didn't think of it in those terms, but I knew that it had lingered, so to speak.
Mm. No, 35 years is not a linger.
Well, look.
What?
35 years is a long time.
It's a
lifetime because in those days,
whole generation,
people didn't live that long. You know, it's not like
true.
We're living and enjoying life now way into the 70s. You know, people died early in those days.
If you take pills, it's the 80s.
what kind of pills are you taking?
Well, rejuvenation pills.
Oh, okay.
That's another topic.
Well, you started it up with this.
And you might, ladies and gentlemen, this is elaborate. We just have fun. We're not politically correct. We're here to celebrate our rich culture of Jamaica, and we are mostly oldies in the diaspora who have fond memories of growing up in Jamaica in the early days before independence. So we are pre-independence people and can relate a lot to the colonial days. And what is exciting to me is how I can hook up some of the behavior and the customs to way back, you know, in the 18th century. So that is quite fascinating to me, and I hope that our listeners will find it interesting too. And my hope is that, you know, it will even serve some of the young people, because I think that when we really delve into the history of Jamaica, whether we have slaves in our background or not is irrelevant, but to know the wonderful things that were accomplished on the island of Jamaica in terms of progress in different areas. You know, I hope that the Jamaicans, the young Jamaicans, our Jamaicans, will take some of this information and be proud about it, you know, and make it inspire them to really continue to achieve greatness that is known to be quite Jamaican. Because, you know, about being industrious and proud and creative is really a talent, you know, or something that you can be proud of, because generations of people who were brought up on the island and who were brought to the island have achieved greatness because of, you know, their persistence and their pride. So I think if one person younger generation hears something, because a lot of people are not reading now, they might read things online, but most of the things online, a lot of things online about Jamaican history, is I don't know if the younger people are accessing it and absorbing it. So hopefully, you know, they will listen to one of these shows one of these days and something will inspire them. So if any of our listeners with their mics open want to add to that, feel free. Silence.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I got to get a feeling now that a lot, not everybody, but a lot of the younger people who are growing up on the island today are not that interested in the past. It's something they want to sort of forget about. But in terms of having pride in some of the accomplishments of the people of the past and just sort of knowing the reasons why some things the way they are in our culture is important to me and has made me very excited about finding it out, because it's like connecting the dots. You know,
yes,
I now know why some things are the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a lot of sense to me.
And I think because of what's happening now, you know, a lot of the good stuff really isn't discussed anymore, and the younger generation maybe not interested because they're not hearing about that. But it's good that you're bringing it back so they can also hear our time that was so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, although things may be different now, you know, it wasn't like that all the time.
Right.
When
right.
we were growing up, it was so different. We felt so free. Everything was so good, whatever, you know. And I hope they really don't lose interest, because it's really a beautiful country, island, you know. But if they're not hearing good things about it, then they're not really going to be that interested.
And
know?
Another thing, that when we were growing up, we were very disciplined, and we would be careful when we speak to religious people.
Mm-hmm.
We would be careful when we speak to our elders, as you say, and we respected authority.
Mm-hmm.
And none of these things are in vogue anymore. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of slippage there, and maybe in time they would, somebody, as you say, may go back and say, oh, we were a lot different island in the early times. Why can't we
be like that anymore?
Be like that anymore.
Right.
So,
and I think one of the most important things is having pride, you know, in your surroundings, in your achievements, in just learning things that are important to the next generation. And I wonder if the younger people now realize that they are the future. They are the future of the island.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have to become responsible for what direction it goes. And the first thing comes to knowing that people in the past took care of themselves as best they could, because, you know, even though these slaves at the time were given the land to cultivate, they didn't have to do it. They were feeding themselves.
Right.
You know, but they were industrial.
I always said to myself that living in Jamaica could never starve.
Right.
Because all of these things that that are grown on the island that you can cultivate in your backyard.
Right.
You know, you shouldn't starve. When you look at what's going on in some of the other parts of the world, Darfur and other areas where people starve the children, big stomachs because they're famished for food, and you know it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be grateful and put to good use the kind of island we have, the land and the water and everything that allow the food to grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think the young people don't go that far in thinking anymore.
But I don't think they are cultivating as much as they did earlier.
Well, this is true,
on,
too,
you know?
Especially the huge fruit trees like, what do you call that? What's that brown fruit that everybody...
Nesberry.
Those were huge trees with lots of Nesberry. You don't see them anymore because the...
In Kingston. Kingston has lost a lot of, you know, their...
Not only Kingston. I mean, you're hard-pressed to find Nesberries when you go around the countryside, too.
Really?
Yeah, and then the point is that they cut down the big trees, the tall trees to make room for housing and
yeah, they're not
planting
as much in the even in the country as before.
Right.
So I don't know how much they're really bringing even into Kingston now. You know.
So Janine, you wouldn't be able to go into the market and taste around everything.
No.
There's nothing to taste.
Nothing to taste. It'll be just a walk and no tasting.
A cake walk, maybe.
Yeah. But even with the part that they used to have the meat, I don't think they really had a lot of chicken. Because in our
Well, yeah, because you had the chicken at your house.
Yeah,
so you're right about that. I didn't see
it.
Anything.
Was mostly meat. Because
you're right.
When you would go there, you'd see all this meat hanging up. And
yeah,
yes,
yeah,
you're right.
Yeah. You're right about
Yes, I don't
chicken
really
is a different story.
Yeah,
right.
It was running in the backyard.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right. The chicken you had for yourself, you know?
Right.
I remember when we were going to have chicken for dinner on a Sunday,
yeah.
We knew exactly the chicken because that chicken
was now
in the cob. And it, you know, my grandmother used to give it medicine and vinegar and clean it out before she cook it, you know. Yes, she used to clean that chicken, couldn't walk on the ground anymore. She would put it in the cob and she would clean it with what we used to call single viable and vinegar, and that chicken would clean out for, and you know that's the one that they're going to wring the neck on Sunday, you know.
But you know, that's another legacy of, you see how chickens are handled in this country. I mean, chickens for eating, and how they, when they prepare the chicken, they don't go through the process of what, let's say, quote-unquote, a Jamaican
Oh, and a lot of Jamaicans living here still do that.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, it's and in the old days, I remember when the helper used to kill a chicken. I mean, it used to scare the hell out of me because they would put a pan over
it. Yeah.
Remember that?
And pull out the neck.
Pumping and hear all this noise.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
But one thing I remembered is that when it was plucked, to get it all the little feathers off would be salt. Do you remember that? Like coarse salt or something.
Mm-hmm. And
or they would put it over
water.
The fire.
Yeah.
To singe it.
They would put it in a lot of hot water, and you know, it was easier then to get the feather off, you know. But
well, I understand here now they're even almost making chickens without feathers. So
when
technology.
You know, when my mother was alive, she never bought chicken in the supermarket. She'd go to the Jewish butcher shop.
Oh yes, I did that when I lived in Brooklyn too.
Yeah.
You know, you bought the kosher chicken.
Yeah.
They used to have them hanging up.
Yeah, my father, when we came here, it took him a very long time to eat the chicken from the supermarket because he was so accustomed to the other chicken, you know, you have your own chicken.
Yeah.
And then for us, the just the way we clean the chicken is such a big ordeal because we have to use the vinegar and we have to use the lime. So, you know, there's nothing to give us anything to hurt us after we have finished.
The chicken sweeter.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me give you a little more history now. to tell you how the Higglers have been just so great. Now, over the years, this is another article from the, I think this is from the library. It says, over the years, the Higgling trade expanded, and they're talking from the old days. No longer did the Higglers remain in one place to peddle their goods, but they also traveled to other places in Jamaica via land, sea, and sell their goods. This proved to be more profitable to the slave Higgler. However, it proved to be a threat to the established white tradesmen, as the slave Higglers provided much competition to them. This competition goes back a long time. So in order to curtail the expansion, several pieces of legislation was passed which restricted the sale of goods by slave Higglers. Some laws restricted the hours of trading in the established market. Others dictated that Higglers obtain license for trading. One piece of legislation was passed by the St. Catherine government, which prohibited slave Higglers from selling or retailing plantation provisions, poultry, fruit, vegetables, grass, and corn within that area. As time passed, the measure became more rigid, which in the passing of legislation in 1834, which banned the selling of goods on Sundays, which resulted in the discontinuation of Sunday markets. So Sunday markets actually went on until 1834. Do you remember, they didn't have the markets on Sunday when we were growing up, did they?
No, it's from Friday into Saturday, because Friday night was a big night. They used to use the lanterns to be able to see, and then they would stay overnight until Saturday, and then after that, they would pack up and go back home. So, you know,
right,
the big markets didn't carry them on a Sunday.
Right.
It was Friday.
And it was a big church day, anyhow, for everybody.
Right.
Now, here they said that free slaves then had, after emancipation, they had total control over their trade. They could plant what they wanted, sell what they wanted, for how much they wanted, and to whom they wanted. Having been given their freedom, some slaves also became owners of plots of lands and were then referred to as peasants. They also began to form links with other black traders. So we're talking about way back in 18-something, you know, after they were freed. Now, Higglering is still a thriving business in Jamaica, and it still maintains some of the characteristics of the trade from the time of slavery. The trade still is a very important component in Jamaica's economy. It is still dominated by women, and there are still common places in which the trade is carried out. However, several changes have also occurred over the years. Higglers now do not sell agricultural products, but a whole range of products, including clothing, accessories, and household items.
Exactly.
Those that travel overseas to procure these items are referred to, as I mentioned, as informal commercial consultants or whatever, the ICIs. No.
And I think they go like to Miami, which is closer.
And they're going to places like Panama now, and different parts of different places where they feel that they can get better prices.
Prices.
Anywhere. It says here, several of them have managed to work their way into communities which were traditionally occupied by middle and upper class persons. They drive expensive vehicles and live a life that is superior to many. Mm-hmm. Whatever your views may be, it cannot be denied that Higglers provide a very essential service, and so should be shown appreciation for their contributions. So tonight I would like to show some appreciation for the Higglers.
Mm-hmm.
because, as I say, I can remember. Do you remember down King Street they had the ones that sold American apples?
Yes, American apples. Yeah, we used to call them that, yes.
Yes.
Right,
now,
Lee
told me that were not from America at the time.
That's what
yeah,
I
actually,
heard, but I was
yeah.
under the impression it was.
Yeah, we all call them American apples. But I later found out that most of them, a lot of them came from Australia.
Really?
Yeah, because I remember that was a treat for us every New Year, Christmas Eve night.
Right, right.
Australian
and they were
apples.
Were polished apples. They were so shiny.
Shine.
I that.
And wrapped in a green tissue.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
they were wrapped. Oh, them, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to do a segment on Louise Bennett. I know she has several of our poems about, you know, the higgling thing.
Oh, okay.
And I was trying to do some research on that to present tonight, but it didn't happen. So I want to thank our listeners for joining us to just go back in time and research what happened, how our internal marketing system that is still quite vibrant and an important part of the Jamaican economy. Because now we realize, Leigh, that even from the days of slavery, that trade constituted 20% of the money that was circulating on the island. I think that's very, very good information. You know, it goes way back. And a lot of the people who are in that trade, whether they're country higglers or, you know, Kingston higglers or town higglers, whatever they call them, I'm sure they are contributing perhaps a bigger portion, a much bigger portion.
I'm remembering the economy.
I'm
remembering the fish woman, too, you know. She would pass by yelling, fish.
Right, and it'd tell you what kind of fish she had, too.
Yeah, and she would go through the litany of the
well, after
of
after a while, they used to ride a bike with the thing on the back.
Really?
The walking, yeah.
No more walking, yeah.
No more walking, but they really used to come, you know, to in front of the gate, and then knew exactly where to go and who.
They had their customers that just like, you know, I suppose those were town higglers. Well, did we call them higglers? It was just the fish woman and the ice man and the whatever.
And the bread man.
And the bread man.
Oh, the bread people, I remember, had the horse-drawn thing with the covered thing in the back.
Yes.
And when those doors open and that smell hit you, I mean, I can smell it now.
My bread man used to let me jump in the driver's
seat. You can't jump in the back where the bread is.
Drive the horses from, you know, I was at the corner house, so I from one corner to the other corner.
Don't forget the peanut man.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Peanut
Charlie,
man and
peanut Sundays. Man.
Yeah.
With a black dolly. You remember that?
Black
he used
dolly?
To walk around with a black dolly.
No, I don't remember.
Yes, in my time.
Peanut man.
The peanut man, Charlie, and he would walk around with a black dolly, and he would speak, and you would think it's a doll that's speaking.
Oh,
what do you call him? The
ventriloquist.
Yeah.
Ah.
So
no, I don't remember. He might have been in your neighborhood.
Yeah, we had that a long time before.
Yeah.
Even here that I know of, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
He used to come around
the same
every
guy for
Sunday.
Years, yeah. And
yeah.
And he had this whistle on the peanut thing.
Right.
He would just walk around and the attraction was the doll.
He
would let this black doll talk to you, you know, and you want to buy the peanut because you want to hear the doll speak, you know.
Okay.
And then by the time he leaves, here comes the fudge man.
Yeah,
so, you know, it was a busy weekend. Yes.
Again,
I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. This is Margaret, your host. And for the callers that are online now, if you want to join the Labrish, just hit 1 on your telephone. And I see we have a caller from my local city. There's a caller from 404-454. So if you want to join the Labrish, let me know. We have a few minutes left. And again, I want to encourage you to go to backyardlabrish.com and set up a profile and join the community. It's quite safe, and we're trying to expand the community. And you can send, if you get a link from me, if you're on my email list, you can always forward that link to someone else. And if they access the link, they can listen to any of the shows. So if you want to direct, if anybody's interacting with me, I want to direct someone to listen to their particular show. Just remember the date it was done or what we covered. And tonight we're covering Jamaica's internal markets. Next week, we're going to be doing home remedies. So I am going to be challenging my listeners to go back in their memory bank and remember that something that grandma or mama or nana or whoever used to do that you might have done with your children or had done to you, and share it with us. Because I have some memory of some things. So I'm hoping that we'll have a lot more interaction next week for our shows. So go, you know, think about it for the rest of the week. Janina, I'm sure you will remember a lot of things, won't you?
I'm going to try because my grandmother was so good at with that, you know.
But yeah.
Years go by, it slips the mind, you know.
Right, so
but
that's
I'm going to think about it.
Because does your daughter know all those things?
I try.
It's one
to
of the things that I'm hoping will really help, because if we leave an oral legacy,
mm-hmm.
you know, or if we go online at the website and leave something, it doesn't have to be public, you know, you don't have to make it public. Hopefully,
right.
you know, when we're off the planet, our children and grandchildren might be
mm-hmm.
interested in finding out something about us and about when we grew up, because
exactly.
there's not a whole lot of Jamaica history about it. There, right now, Dr. Joy Lumsden, who resides in Jamaica, and I do use a lot of her material sometimes, is trying to piece together the lives of people who really did some, you know, very brilliant things in 18-something and the early 19-something, and there's no written information about them. So she picks up a death certificate here and something from Aglina there and something else, and she puts their lives together.
Right.
You think whatever they did was an important contribution to the progress of the whole island, or important to the culture. So we don't have to do that. We're blessed with this modern technology. You know, we've come from the days of no light till
mm-hmm.
the days of cyberspace.
Right.
I encourage the senior Jamaicans, if any of our younger listeners are on, encourage your seniors to listen in or call in, or you call in and then plug them in to where from whatever city they are, you know, just to let them listen, and we welcome them to talk. And you don't have to get too personal and tell us where you are and all that, you know, information about your personal life. But
right,
we want
right.
you to help us with what you remember about growing up in Jamaica before independence. So, with that, I want to, Leigh, do you have any parting words?
No words of wisdom tonight.
Oh, really?
I'm a listener tonight. You know, I mentioned before that the marketing was a ladies' thing.
That's true.
We didn't get to do any exploring in the marketplace or talking to the Higlas the way the ladies did. So,
And that's something that we're going to do another time. You know, in the old days, how boys and girls were treated differently in our culture when we were growing up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were going to do some details about that perhaps younger folks will find very interesting. Very, very interesting. Because, you know, things have changed so much because a lot of times in the old days we didn't have co-ed schools. There were a few and far between. There were girls' schools and boys' schools.
Boys' schools, right.
Right. So, and we didn't have co-ed camps and things like that. I go online now for even my grandchildren and see that the teenagers are having co-ed sleepovers and, you know, all sorts of things. And I said, wow, you know, because in my day, boys weren't even allowed to do certain things like go in the kitchen.
No, they weren't.
Yeah. So I think that the listeners will find that interesting, or some foreigners who just want to know about the Jamaican culture might also find that interesting. So do tell your friends about what we do here once a week. Every Wednesday we're here at 8 o'clock and we're lavishing in the backyard. We pretend that we're in the backyard in Jamaica and the trade winds are blowing over our face, and no matter what the climate is, whether it's summer or winter, we can feel those trade winds as we sip on our planter's punch or coffee liqueur or rum punch or rum and cocoa cola, whatever.
Let's not get carried away now.
Yeah. Remember that was a song in your day?
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget about the blackberry brandy.
Oh, no, I didn't know that one. But I remember there were several songs about the market. One was Carry Me Aki Go A Linsted Market.
Market.
Not Quatty What
Sell.
Mm-hmm. I think that is still one of the songs that the people who, you know, portray the cultural things from the past still sing.
And the River Bend Come Down, remember?
Yes.
Never heard of that one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I know that one either. But we're going to do a show on that, too. We have so much interesting stuff that, you know, I find exciting that we have to discuss. Boy, I keep saying, you know, so much information, so little time.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, thank you all. I want to give one story. I don't know if it has happened to anybody else about markets before we go off the air. And I remember that my mother, I wasn't with her at the time. I think I was here in the United States. But I remember my mother going to the market twice on two different occasions and coming home with a new daughter. Because, yes, in those days, some of the country people, if they had somebody they liked, they would ask them to take one of their children. Are you familiar with that custom?
To work for them?
To be a school girl so they can go to school in Kingston.
Yes.
You know, perhaps
yes.
They live in a remote part of the country.
Yes.
And they have. But my mother ended up with two different young girls.
Yes.
That I remember one of them was when I was pretty young too. And she came from St. Elizabeth. And I could not understand her. People believe that everybody, because you came from Jamaica, everybody spoke the same way. She had a different dialect. She had a totally different dialect in Patois that I could not unravel until, you know, I got accustomed to it. But I remember this young lady. I don't remember how old she was, but my mother brought her home from the market. Apparently, this country person that she bought from regularly begged her to have this child come live with her, you know, for a period of time.
A better life for school.
Yes. And that was one time. And then after that, I know that she took another young lady from the country. But I said, you know, she went to the country to buy produce or whatever and came home with a child.
Now they would call that kidnapping.
Right. And of course, in the United States,
you remember where that market was?
It's anti-labor. You know what I mean?
You remember where that market was? Maybe I can get a child out there.
No, that don't go on any colonial days. And people felt safe with people at the time. You know, people's minds were not as messed up.
No.
In terms of what's going on in the whole world nowadays. And I suppose there was a different level of trust in those
yes.
days, because I don't think it was because the people were irresponsible. It's just because they felt comfortable in doing
well,
that.
Well, look at it another way. If the woman, the person's parents or whatever, could have afforded it, they would have gone to a boarding school.
Right,
exactly.
right, right.
So look at it that way.
Right. Economically,
it was helpful,
you know, to that family.
Yeah.
They were comfortable with the idea because they knew the person, you
yes,
know.
Right, so.
That's right. And that's just from knowing them in the market. It's not like, you know, someone that she knew. It's one of her suppliers that supplied her with whatever she bought.
You know, that brings to mind another custom of people in Jamaica. I don't know if they do it in other countries, too. I imagine they do. Where a family that would have several children would sort of, I mean, for want of a better way of putting it, give over one of the children to a sister or a brother.
Oh, yes, that was very common.
That was common.
Right, and I know where it was. I was even given in love, not because of you know, like one sister would have a lot of children, the other one wouldn't have any,
right.
And the sister having a lot of children say, "I'll give you one of mine."
Yeah.
But you know, remember, it's a small island. It's not like the child is off to some foreign country or something.
Exactly, and it's not as if they're not seeing the child anymore.
Right. So I know several families. That, you know, that went on. I know a lot, even in my own family.
And the school, the child, and everything, you know?
Oh, yes. Now, that is different from a school girl. That is totally different from a school girl, and it's totally different from a boarder, like you used to have in those days. Because a lot of the people in the country who could afford it, their child would now come up to, their young lady would now come up to Kingston to go to a particular high school, and they would board with that family. That family would provide them with room and board. That means, you know, they
yeah, well, that's,
for their
that's,
meals
that's
and their
thing.
Discipline, really.
Yeah, I mean, that goes on even in this country, even as we speak.
Right,
you know,
right.
I have several friends that will take in a Japanese or a...
You talk about an exchange student, though,
yeah.
Like that?
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, that's sort of a little different than...
Well, you know, the concept is
The same. The concept is the same. And then you have I don't know if the schoolgirl thing is still going on down there. I really don't know much about that. But it's quite interesting. And again, I am having... It's really keeping me young to do the research and finding out all these things and connecting the dots. Sometimes I'm shrieking like a kid, you know, when I say, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this. You know, it just makes a lot of sense. As I said, when I came here in the 50s, I was a little, it was interesting to see that the Jamaicans that were here at the time were all very secure in who they were, you know, no matter what shape they were. It was never... A feeling of not feeling good enough, of being inferior or so, and they always went for what they wanted. They perhaps never always got it, but there was that pride and confidence, as you said, you know, that was a little different from what I was seeing at the time. I'm talking about the late 50s that was happening with say, the Jamaican people of different shades. I mean, the American people of different shades, you know, it was sort of. And I didn't understand exactly why. But now everything is sort of falling in place, that it goes way back. Because they were taught to take care of themselves. They never got anything for free. You know, it was just a different concept. Anyway, we're almost out of time, and I want to thank all our listeners. The board is full. We have listeners from all over. 631-718-404. And listeners listening online, I hope you enjoy the Labrish. I hope you'll tell your friends and you'll join us again next week. Next week, we're going to be discussing Jamaican home remedies. So come tell us about what your grandma used to do when they were taking care of you.
And we should talk about Jamaican athletes. I'm actually watching the athlete channel now, and Jamaican girls are about to race. So.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Where are they and what's going on?
This is I think it's all about the the title of it is Pieces of 2008. So I would imagine it's part of the Olympics. I just saw Bolt run.
Oh, I see. It's like a rerun or
rerun, yeah.
For that, right?
And the Jamaican girl is being introduced now.
I got you. Yeah. All right. Well, we want to thank all our listeners for tuning in. Do join us in the backyard next week at 8 o'clock and bring someone along when we talk about Jamaica's home remedies.
Good night. Good night, Janine.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks
Bye
for
night.
Calling in.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you, dear. Look for you next week.
Yes. God bless.
Bye.
Bye-bye.